here in LA, sitting in Magnus Hastings' home. Today I'm so happy that I have Magnus sitting with me. Magnus, can you tell the audience about who you are and your journey to become who you are today?
My name is Magnus Hastings, and I'm a photographer who moved to LA 13 years ago from London. I photograph particularly drag queens, queer people, and I'm part of that whole rise of drag that happened 10 years ago. I was a big part of that. That's who I am.
Magnus, I've known you since millions of years ago.
I was a little girl.
And you were such a teenage girl. And actually, Magnus, you know, you were an actor. I remember when I met you, you were an actor, and you keep on complaining that you were too tall. And too tall for any theater, and then you couldn't get
I was too tall because when you put me next to women, they'd look lovely and delicate and fragile, but you put me next to any other man and they look like a dwarf. So I would either have to be the lead or the villain, but you couldn't give me a small part. The only big, not big role I got, but the biggest thing I did was a Noel Coward play where I played the lead handsome actor. It was about putting on a play within a play, and because all the other men in it were playing gay, I was playing and I wasn't. and they're all straight, and I was screamingly gay, but it was Noel Coward. I was allowed to be
who you are.
Me. And it was period. But I was playing this young, handsome actor who could be tall, and within the play, it wasn't a big part, but I was allowed to be that because the director was playing gay, the director being the actor. The lead actor was playing a director, and he was short.
And okay, and then why from actor? And then you transform into...
No, I'd always been... I've been taking photographs for years. My dad was semi-professional, and I kind of grew up watching...
I thought your dad was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer, but he did... He had a dark room, and he was always developing pictures. And He was very... don't want to say a hobby. I say semi-professional because he had lots of things published. But he was some kind of photographer. He was good, but it was always about people. I remember he did like Dudley Moore's album covers, and he did just things. And I stole all his enlarging equipment was all in the attic, and I stole that and turned my bedroom into a dark room because it had a sink. And then I taught myself. I didn't study photography. I just taught myself. I just played around until I got it how I wanted it.
But why drag? Why
drag?
Because
I was a little drag child, because it makes sense to me. So,
what do you mean by little drag child?
I was cross-dressing. We were like polar opposites. My sister Sophie, your friend.
My very good friend.
She had a boxing gloves and was on the football team, and she was this little... should have been a lesbian, but she wasn't. She was this little bruiser, and I had dolls, used to wear her clothes, used to borrow mum's feather boas, used to lip sync to songs. I was just wanted to be a little girl, and I used to cross dress all the time. It got shamed out of me. I remember my dad once saying to me while I was lip syncing to a song, and he said, "People make careers out of that." And I knew there was something humiliating about it. And then my mum, I used to put on plays, and I'd always be the lead girl. I'd make Sophie and my stepsister Tash be the supporting roles, and I'd be the lead woman, girl. And I remember mum once saying, "Will you ever play the boy?" at me. And I was, so there were moments, so it kind of got shamed out of me. And then when I got older, I got tall, and I had this thing about if I'm gonna, I have to be a beautiful drag queen rather than a man in a dress. So it just became something that...
So why didn't you become a drag queen?
Because I didn't want, because I became, again, my height interfering with everything. But no, but also my photographing it is my expression of it. I've never felt like I'm observing it. I've always felt like I'm participating in it. So I come within, I understand exactly what's going on internally in a way. So I've always been part of the world and not someone. For instance, I don't take pictures of, for years, drag queens are always this sort of looking wistfully into mirrors like they're going to have a miserable life. It's an unhappy gay man, whereas it wasn't ever about that. It was about celebrating these incredible, exotic creatures. So I came at it from a different way.
So, okay, so before you came to LA, you already started your drag photographer.
I did start that. I I was an actor, and then I was doing headshots as a photographer, and I was doing very well at it, but it was like disposable, hideous photography. And I ended up, well, it was just dealing with people's neuroses all the time. And anyway, and so, but then I suddenly had enough of acting, and I remember calling my agent and saying, I don't want to do it anymore. And I really stuck to it. And they said, we've got an audition for you going to Broadway. And I went, I don't care, I don't want to do it. I just, no, I'm done. And then within 3 months, I went into like it was the only bar called The Box in London.
Of course I know The Box.
No, the old box, not the new
old
box.
Okay.
You know the debauchery box. This was like a bar that had a gallery. But it was at the time the only one that was like a queer space for photos. And I went in and said, can I have an exhibition? And I said, do you need to see a picture? And they went, yeah. And I showed them some stuff and they went, okay. And they usually had a waiting list and they bumped them off and put me in. And I did quite a clever thing. I photographed local gay Soho celebrities, you know what I mean, gay famous people. So it felt like a celebrity exhibition and it included two or three drag queens. And I went around and I did these things and I blew them up and I had them pressed onto PVC. And I just did these things that I saw in my that I wanted to do, and I had no idea if anyone was going to like them. And I put them up at night, and I remember going, well, I really like them. And they were all very kind of in-your-face, colourful, pop-arty. And so I put them up thinking, I like them, but I have no idea. And then the next day, the thing opened, and Time Out walked past and put it as their show of the week. It just went
viral.
Everywhere. And then I was asked to shoot all the covers of all the gay magazines. All the covers of all the gay magazines from that. So my career just, it was giving up acting and flipping to that, and within 3 or 4 months, it was working. It was like what I should have been doing all along, really.
Did you make, shooting magazine doesn't pay.
No, it doesn't. I'm an artist, but I'm not rich.
You're rich enough to support yourself.
You just. Yeah. And I have a lovely
apartment. Thanks, Father.
No, that's so fair. Don't drop that in.
It's okay, because what is important in life is find your real passion. And it is incredibly lucky that, both you and I, we can work for our passion.
When I inherited some money the last time, I was at the time, I didn't know how I was going to pay my rent, and then this, it just happened.
Yeah.
And overnight, I was like, oh my God, I've got some money. And the first thing I did was I can now do this project that I want to do. I can now, so I'm now again, not feeling particularly affluent, but because all I care about is creating and doing stuff. And that's what I've used any
This is
for.
Great, because we have to thank, really, really be thankful that you have a passion and I have a passion and we both can work, on jobs that we love. How many people
that? No, I do. I sit there and think. My friends have got a running gag that me with my charmed life because I kind of do. But yes, I've been able to.
Yeah.
To be able to say no to things and to just
exactly
go, this
exactly
is what I
and
do.
That is a really fantastic thing, fabulous,
yeah,
fabulous life, darling.
In LA, in my little tiny shoebox.
So then you start doing the photograph.
Oh, so I did
the magazines.
That. So I was doing that, but at the same time, I then went to Sydney. So the big drag thing happened. So I'd done a few drag queens. In London, and that had taken off, and then I went to Sydney. So then I went to Sydney, and it was like
I didn't even know that Sydney has this.
Sydney at the time, so that was in 2003, maybe two, and it had the most incredible drag scene. Where
really?
the shows they were putting on huge. In England, it was like a bruiser of a drag queen singing live and being funny. And in Sydney, it was a full, it was all about lip syncing, but lip syncing incredibly. So you really believe that you're watching this show. And they did huge numbers and they put money at it. And they were incredible. And I walked in one of the first nights, I took my cameras with me and I had my portfolio from all the stuff in England. And I just arrived in Sydney and went, oh my God, this is where I need to be. And I walked into a club. And there was, actually it's in my bedroom, the picture, but there was a Vanity Fair dressed as Dorothy, but immaculately dressed as Dorothy, the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And it turns out she now makes wigs, and she'd made her first wig, and it was, and I was just transfixed by this creature doing a version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And I then said, I need to photograph you. And she said, have you got a card? And I said, no. I was just like, what? It was so weird. And then I went in the next day to her shop where she worked, and she looked through my book and she went, okay. And she turned out was the Queen Bee of Sydney.
Oh, really? Oh,
and,
my God.
And because she did it, the whole thing opened up to me, and I started to photograph the Queens there. But also, the next year I photographed Courtney Act, but it was the thing that I did was I photographed them in a totally different way. It was, I remember when Courtney sent me a thing so once I'd done the ones there, then I was sent in to see a magazine that doesn't exist anymore. Oh, what's it called? There was a big, like, artsy Sydney gay magazine, and I was sent in because someone heard I was doing this drag thing. And the editor was really rude, and she sat there and she said, so I hear you're doing drag queens, niche market. And I said, okay. And I opened the book and she went, oh my God, it's pop art. And she gave me a 10-page spread there and then. First thing, first magazine I'd ever walked into in like that with my work rather than.
Wow.
And yeah, and it became, so it was, I was then always planning to do a book. And but anyway, so when I left Sydney, Courtney sent me an email saying, I just want to thank you for what you're doing for drag. And what
Courtney
you're,
is
doing. Courtney Act is a very famous drag. She won Celebrity Big Brother in England. She was on RuPaul's Drag Race. She's in here somewhere? She's on the cover of my book, Drag. And she became my muse, and we did loads and loads and loads of stuff together. She just sent me this email saying how I was really doing something new and different, because I wasn't looking at drag queens it's like when people say to me, why are you interested in drag queens? As if they're these things that, isn't that interesting? These gay men who do, and I'm like,
these
no.
These creatures.
It's about art. It's about creating art. And that's the one thing my book did. I found out it was, when that came out, I found it was in like the Harvard Library and in makeup schools and things, because the people were studying the makeup and what people were doing. But anyway, so I'm going fast forward, but it was, yeah, it was about looking at it differently. And that's what I did, because I think, because I come, as I say, from inside. I'm not going, oh, who are these funny drag queens? And also, the basic thing is, if someone spent three hours doing their makeup in the mirror, shading their face, you don't stick a fucking light here.
Yeah.
You liked this. And I was one of the first people to actually do that. So they go,
really?
Yeah, because they'd always go, oh, let's be creative and arty, and not go, you've got a, it's actually a man in makeup. And if you do that, you're going to highlight all the male features. But if you like the shading and what they've done, then the illusion is there. And no one was doing that.
Wow. Not just a pretty face, my dear.
Aging, sagging.
So Sydney is actually your opening.
That was my opening. But I planned to do a book then, and it was called Dragged Around the World. And then I got back to England and I went to see a publisher. I went to the Elton John AIDS Foundation and they were into it. And I then went to see my first publisher and she said, great, let's get a psychiatrist to write the foreword.
Psychiatrist? Why?
Because they're strange men in dresses in her head. And I said, no.
No.
That's not for me. And she apparently then kept the picture of Dorothy and pinned it up behind her thing. But I was like, no, not my thing. And so it kind of got sidelined. I ended up through the magazines, I was doing lots of pop stars and more mainstream queer stuff. But I was
You were doing celebrities.
I was doing celebrity stuff for the gay magazines, which got me my visa to here, because all my work was all celebrities. So I played on that to get my visa.
As a working visa here?
Yeah, to get my working visa to come to America. But once I got here, and there was a manager...
But what? Why America? Why couldn't you stay in London?
Because I felt like I got well known in England as this gay photographer, and at the time...
In a range of how long?
Like
5, 6 years, 2, 3 years?
Maybe 5 years, 5 or 6 years, yeah. I felt like I'd gone as far. I felt like straight magazines and things, but I wasn't hitting that. So I kind of went, I also was out here and I did a bit of work on the side for 1 year, and I just felt this is where I wanted, it just felt like where I needed to be. But then this guy was helping me get out here, and he said, just bury all your gay stuff, you're better than that, and all of this. And I was like,
what do you mean by better?
Exactly, it was so stupid in my drag stuff. And he said, you've got to do celebrity. And I got here, and then within 5 minutes, I went, just drag is what I get. And then Courtney moved here at the same time, and then she introduced me to some of the Drag Race girls. And so I started doing that and just getting myself back into drag, which I loved. And then I turned that into a Facebook page because I thought, I've got all of these images of drag. What am I doing? No one's seeing them. I'm just kind of... It was kind of pre-Instagram as well, I guess. So no one was seeing anything. And that really took off. And then I got a show in New York. It was called The Out Hotel. And it had a massive gallery space. And I was staying there in New York, and I went, this would be good for me to have a show. But I also knew that, so season 6 of Drag Race was about to come out. I shot the finalists. So I wanted...
How did you get into RuPaul's drag show being the photographer?
I was shooting them independently. I was then asked to be on one episode. I was on one episode, but I made...
What?
I was on one episode, and then I completely fucked that all up. I mean,
How did you fuck it up?
Because I was rude, and they were shady.
Why were you rude?
Because I turned up. I was really nervous, and they asked me to be on season 7, episode 1, as the guest photographer. But they phoned me up, and they said, will you do it? And I'd just come off my show in New York, which was a big success.
What show in New York?
So I had this show in New York called Why Drag, which turned into... And I got a literary agent from that. I got a book deal from that. So I was riding high in drag world and gay world, being... the drag guy.
Drag photographer.
The big drag photographer. And so then, and also once I started reaching out to people from the Sydney thing, I was well known within the drag community knew me. If they were good at drag, they knew of me because there were so few people doing it and I was the one changing it. And then they asked me to be on episode 1 and I said, am I judging? Because the photographer is always judged. No, you're not judging, but you're going to be so important. You're going to be announced in the workroom. We're going to judge off your pictures. It's going to be a whole thing. And I had various conversations with them and I said, just as long as you don't make me look insignificant because I've built this thing up, no problem. So I turn up on the day and they said, they'd already said, bring some of these clothes, normal clothes. And then they said, where are your black clothes? I said, well, I haven't got any black clothes. Are you making me a stage manager? And then they said, no. And then they had extras around me with cameras. So I was basically looking like a paparazzi. So I'm going, what is going on? And then what did they do? Then Ru came over to introduce himself and started to talk to me in an Australian accent. And I was so nervous. I went, why are you talking in an Australian accent? And he went, are you not Australian? And I went, no. But I was kind of rude because I was nervous.
Did you tell him that you're
Yeah, and I also was looking at him going, we do yoga. We've been in the same yoga class with 10 people for the last year. Do you not recognize? It's like in my head thinking, this is really weird. I mean, he was being really, in retrospect, he was being sweet. But I was being kind of, what's going on? Being a nightmare. And then...
You're always in there.
No, I'm better now, I told you. And I've learned.
So Ru came over.
He came
and
over
you
and
were
I was schmuck. I wasn't rude.
You
I was
schmuck.
I was just like, what's going on?
Can you apologize to Ru now?
No, I've seen Ru afterwards, but I don't want to actually dissect Ru.
Okay.
Because she's not the easiest. But anyway.
Of course. So, she's mega now.
Yeah. Well, she was, yeah. But then the producers, it just got worse from there. Then The main producers heard me speaking and saw me and went, oh, well, actually, we want to mic him and we want, because I wasn't on mic. So they mic me up. And then I thought, why are you miking me? I'm not speaking to anyone. I'm at the end of the runway shooting these queens. And I'd have this thing where I talk to myself all the time, all out loud, because I live on my own. So I mumble and complain out loud. But I was mic'd, forgot I was mic'd. And they'd ask me to do something, and I go, I'm not fucking doing mumbling to myself. I'm not breaking my light. I'm not doing that. I mean, all of this. And I was at lunch, forgetting I was still mic'd, still mumbling and complaining. Then they took the thing off, and then they came back to me saying, actually, we want to mic you and interview you about all of the girls. And they wouldn't let me they didn't give me a list of names. They didn't let me see the pictures. So I was then stuck on camera. They said, you look great on camera. This is like your audition to be regular. So I'm like, nervous. And then they said, so what about so-and-so? And I go, well, who's that? Because when I'm taking pictures, I'm focused on getting a great shot, not on what they're wearing, what they're called, since I didn't know their names. So it was very awkward. And they kept saying, then say something nice about them, say something mean about them. And I went, and I said, this isn't, I haven't got a job with you. I have my reputation with all the queens. They all want to work with me. They all know me. I'm not going to start bad-mouthing queens because you want a soundbite and I have no guarantee of a regular on here. So anyway, it just got worse. Anyway, cut to the, finally, I go to the launch and I went, I was supposed to be in San Francisco. I changed it because they said, you are coming. You're in the show. And I went there and they cut me down to an eighth of a second. So on the day he said, you've been announced in the workroom, all the girls went mad, they're all thrilled. All of it was cut. So all it was me going click with my name flashing up on the screen, saying celebrity photographer or something. So I stood there in this thing going, don't cause a scene, don't cause a scene, as I drank more and more and more. And of course, in the end, I was like moaning and bad-mouthing people. Not a full scene there, but I was pissed off. And then I went home going, right, check your emails, because we had all these agreements. And I realized they'd done the whole thing on the phone, so there was nothing in writing. And I just sent a message going, I was really up. Just, I understand you have a show to make and you had to edit it. I get it, but just a heads up would have been nice that you'd tell me it was all cut. And they gave me a, we really appreciate you. Sorry you feel like that, all of this bullshit. But then I would get drunk out in public and badmouth World of Wonder and say very rude things. And then Bianca Del Rio said to me at one point, please stop badmouthing them. They know you're better. So, okay. So I blew that. And then I did Dragula and I blew that.
Why drag?
You Dragula. Blew? Dragula's another.
Yes, Dragula is another.
Dragula. So I was a guest judge on that twice.
So why did you blew that?
The first time I was smash hit. And then the second time I did it and we were, and It just dragged on all day. And they'd asked me to be the regular judge on that. And then I couldn't do it because I was going to London. And then I was rude to the Boulay brothers on on New Year's Eve. And because, again, I was drunk and I was rude to them. And then they didn't invite me back. That's the potted story. I could give you a much more explicit version, but that's enough.
So, but now you...
But we're fine. I mean, it's just... It is what it is. It's the lesson of... Being
as today's madness.
Well, no, and today I don't drink or take
Bravo.
Drugs. So,
Bravo.
And it makes a difference. It
means because when you drink, all your
it's
inhibitions.
Insecurities.
No, your inhibitions is just completely.
It's your inhibitions,
erased.
But also it's all these voices in your head, your insecurities, and you think it's all your paranoia and all of that stuff. It's not rational. And the thing that we're cutting very fast forward to this huge show I've just had in London. That happened, I've been 2.5 years sober, and that happened in sobriety. Now, if it hadn't been, I was such a... They thought I was the nicest...
Explain to the audience about your London show.
So I just finished, had a show at the Walker Gallery. It's in Liverpool, the huge, amazing, prestigious gallery in Liverpool. Asked me to have a show, like a retrospective, and then also fly there and shoot local queens. So it started off being a big show of... They approached me and they asked me to do it, and I'm like, okay, fine. So what happened was I got asked to do a show at the Walker Gallery in Liverpool. They approached me earlier in the year. They'd approached me last year and it didn't happen, but it was very kind of haphazard and didn't feel very official. I didn't know what was going on. And then this year they came back, but with a full proposal, asking me to go over. But I had no idea the kind of extent of it. So initially they said, coming over, having a show, and I thought, great, whatever space it's going to be. And I also, at this point in my career, I'll see it when I believe it. Let's see. But then they said, send us some pictures and we'll do a mock-up of the gallery. I sent through some stuff. They sent me back this walkthrough and I was like, holy shit. There were pictures that were 9 foot by 20 foot.
Wow.
It was like huge, wall-size prints.
I love it.
It was incredible. And it was so exciting. And so how after 10 years of these days, if you work, unless someone buys a print or you're shown in a gallery, but then it's never that big. But people generally see all your work on a fucking phone or a computer
yes.
screen. And so finally I'm doing, and especially drag, which is so huge. And I'm suddenly looking at going, this is how it's supposed to be seen. But just the fact that it was so easy to work with them, they then... At one point, I said, they said, this is the space you've got, these huge ones. The smallest ones were, I think, 3 foot by 2 foot. So when the big ones were 9 foot by 20 feet. I mean, it was incredible. And they said, we want to fly you over and shoot local queens to mix in with all, because I've shot all of the big famous drag queens now, all of them. So it was like a star-studded drag show. And then I went over and shot the local queens. There was a section of that, so it was mixed in. So it really fed to the community, but also showcased the people love seeing of the famous ones too. But then at one point I said, so I had a project I did that was called Gay Face, that was more, it was queer rather. It wasn't just drag, it was the whole community. And I said, well, why don't I do, instead of one of the huge pictures, we do an installation of, say, 20 of the white boxes of famous drag queens. And he said, fuck that, let's just do, why don't we turn the whole first gallery space into white boxes? So this is how good this guy was. So you walked in and there were 110 white boxes. Whoa. He built a life-size white box for people to take their own pictures in. It was
amazing,
insane. And it was the show with the white boxes was the show I couldn't have because COVID happened when all of that was launched. The book was launched during COVID. So it was, every step would be bigger and better. And it was also everything we said, we worked so well together. And it leads back to the drinking thing. I was sober, so when there were moments when I would normally have gone, oh, and got annoyed and gone, I want this, I was able to react in such a different way. So, I mean, people have known me for years laugh because I said they thought I was the easiest, nicest person to work with. Because I was. I was just, it was about creating something and being, and working with, and also to be fair, I've been working on a different project with someone who's intolerable, so that's, but it was just a wonderful experience that I think I would have got too nervous and crazy had I not been sober. But it was a amazing, huge hit, and it was amazing, and now we're hoping it tours and the gallery want to tour it and all sorts of stuff. So
you were very happy.
I did have people going, I went there and there were like banners flying outside this gallery with my name on them, pictures on, and somebody said, are you just taking a breath and looking at what's going on? And also people going, this is a gallery for the first time seeing drag as a proper art form. Wow. And you, as an artist, and it was very interesting to, and at one point I was going, well, I can't put that in, it's like everyone knows that picture. I thought, well, isn't that the point? It's like this classic famous drag picture that people can now see 9 foot tall, and it's a huge bit of pop art.
It's amazing.
Yeah,
so you basically destroy your opportunities.
My TV opportunities.
Your TV opportunities on both drag
big
shows.
Drag shows, yes.
And the drag shows, and during the time when drag queen was becoming
mainstream. The one thing I was pleased to hear, somebody said they got the breakdown from World of Wonder, who produce Drag Race. They had the 20 most important things in drag history. And my book, Why Drag, was on the list. So at least they don't hate me that much to not put me on in there. But no, so from the show in New York, so all of that happened around that time. Then
and the book, Why Drag, has it published yet during the time?
Yeah, do you want me to show you?
Yeah, please, show. You should give me one. Wow, she's beautiful.
This is Courtney Act, what I was talking about.
Oh my God, look, she's beautiful. Oh,
it's
but
fun.
I love the way you put that.
I mean, obviously, I can barely look at it now because I've grown a lot since doing it.
Of course, that's many years ago.
This is 2016, so it's 20. They were shot from sort of 2014 onwards. Oh, I can show you the Dorothy though. This is like 20 years old. This is when I. Yeah.
Is this the makeup Bible?
That's the Dorothy.
Oh, really looks like.
Yeah, this is the Dorothy. There you go. Whoever wants to see that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what happened? So from the show, I got a literary agent. Suddenly hit me up from this New York thing. So in New York, it was about 40. I did it all on canvas because I didn't want them behind glass because, again, I wanted it to feel like you're in it. And there were about 40 of them, and I blew them up as big as possible. They were all canvases, so that was the cheapest way to do it. And And everyone went crazy in New York for that, because again, no one had seen anything like that in that way. And people, I was hearing people going back and back and back to see it. But so this literary agent who didn't actually go to see it saw an interview with me and some pictures, called me in, and I thought, okay, fine. And then he offered to represent me. And it seemed like I had so many, I had already had a foreword by Boy George, because I'd asked him to write it, and he ended up writing it for me, and I pretended the book was being published when really it was my show, so I put it. So I had it, and he and it was on the, so there was a picture of him and then his introduction in the exhibition. But it was like a no-brainer. There were all these pictures, and drag was really exploding. Not every single publisher that it went to would go, there'd be people obsessed with it, and I'd always find out there was one straight man going, ugh, drag, no. And it went, and the agent was really going, what the fuck is going on? And then it finally went to, God, I can't remember my publisher now, to Chronicle Books in San Francisco, and they took it, thankfully. Because, and then it became a real, it's like a drag Bible. It was a huge hit, and it's still being published 8 years later and all of that. But it was amazing that it was Rizzoli had it, but they nearly took it, then they didn't. And then they published somebody else's book and used half my pictures without asking. I mean, it's just...
Half of the picture without asking?
One point someone said, can we use some of these pictures? And I said, no, they turned my book down. I'll be fucked if they can use all my pictures in a different drag book. And then they wangled some, because some of the drag queens misinformed them and said they were able to use the pictures, which they weren't. But anyway, who cares? But it was, they see the new me goes, that's fine. The old me is, fuck you.
And then after that, what happened?
So that happened, and then I was just basically being the drag guy, just shooting and shooting and shooting drag stuff, drag queens, all the most famous ones, doing album covers.
You must know all the drag.
I know all of them.
Drag queens, because there's, I mean, drag queens have become mainstream because of the RuPaul drag race.
No, well, I know all of the big ones. I mean, then it comes to a point where the new seasons, it's kind of become so exhausting and so conveyor belty. I mean, for the show in London, I shot the top three of the last season, season 16, specifically, so it felt very current. So I had Plain Jane, Sophia, and Nymphia Wind in the show. But I mean, it was Sharon Needles said to me, she won one of the seasons, and she said, your work is like the representation of the explosion and drag in the noughties, I guess, and beyond. But now it's hard. I was so obsessed with it and so hardworking. And after COVID, all of these kids want to do it for free, and there's so many drag queens. I mean, I know the ones I work with mostly are the real Alaska and Trixie and Courtney and the people to me who are the real legends of drag.
Wow. When you say legends of drag...
Well, because the new ones are nice, but once in a while one will pop out who's really special. But there's still a conveyor belt of them.
Let me ask you, do you think a drag queen should be an entertainer? Because today...
I do.
You know, one of the conversations I had today was that, you know, most of the drag queens today, they can only lip sync, but they don't have the wit. They cannot do, you know, they cannot hold a show, they're not a comedian.
No, I mean, there are...
What do you think about today's drag?
I think she's
drag?
Right. No, I think today's drag, I find... It's
just a pretty face.
There's a type. There's people like Alaska and like Jackie, obviously, but people who really are, they've come up through the ranks of drag before there was a show. They were drag queens and they're about performing and playing in clubs and being funny. And There's a huge wave of
but drag that queens. Is an older generation, right?
Well, there's some of the younger generation want to do that, but they've also, the younger generation have grown up watching Drag Race with TikTok and with Instagram. So it's all about the visual. And it's really depressing. It's not, I mean, when I was doing that book, there's a lot of San Francisco drag in there, which was so exciting and so punk rock. And you go in there and no one had any money in San Francisco because everything's so expensive there. So
yes.
they spent all their money on whatever they could on drag. All their money was spent on rent. So they spent everything, so they put together shows on a shoestring, and it was like theatre. It would disappear. It was one night, and it would disappear. And it was so, people stapling their tips to their heads, and it was like crazy shit. that was about. It's not for
but
kids.
But there's creativity, huge creativity.
So creativity. And the thing, like, I've just been asked to produce a drag brunch, and I kind of went, well, I was asked to help find someone to do it, and I went, you know what, why don't I just do it? So, because I know everybody. So I've started to do that, and then I haven't been to a drag show for about 4 years since COVID, and I went to a few.
Oh, where?
Just locally, and it was, they were so boring. I mean, what has happened? All it was, especially in America, because they're all about tips in America, but it's the girls would come out and then start to sort of sing a song and lip sync to a song, and then they're just wandering around taking tips. And I'm like, what the fuck? And in San Francisco, the thing I loved was they'd go and put on a show, and if you wanted a tip, you'd screw your tip up and throw it on the stage because they're not interrupting their show for anything. Whereas here it was just wandering around, death drop, grip the tips. And I just went, I've already said to the queens I've asked to do my show that I want you performing on stage. I don't want you going near a tip for over half of the song, and then you can go and get them. So put on a fucking show, because that was real.
When would the show be?
It's in Venice on the 20th of October.
I won't be here. I would love to see.
I
love drag show.
Well, my one, I've got some good queens in it. So.
And can you tell everybody about when the show? At least
so
you can.
It's at the Venice West on the 20th. The first one is at the Venice West on the 20th of October, Lincoln Boulevard. 1717 Lincoln Boulevard. Show starts at 12. It's 12 to 3. Doors open at 11. TheVeniceWest.com. Look it up.
That's great. Okay. So go on, and then.
Oh, so that book happens. Yeah. So then I was just doing, just shooting. I'm being asked to shoot things, album covers for they were doing Christmas albums. I was just always busy. I wanted to do pop videos, and I never got around to it because I was always busy. And then I thought I've got to do my next book, and I was trying to work out what.
Yeah, you were doing Gay Face, right?
Yeah. Well, so I was in a bar. And I was thinking, what can I do? It was about 2 years after this came out, because I was doing all sorts of stuff on the back of this, doing interviews. And then I remember sitting in this bar going, what do I want to do for my next project? I'd always wanted to do something called Gay Face, because it made me laugh, because it's like an insult. and I wanted to own it. Do you know the idea? He's got Gay Face. And I thought, well, what is the face of gay and all of that stuff? So I wanted to do that, and then I thought,
what? Do you have a gay face?
I don't, actually. I can do. You do. Pearl and her gay face. But then I also wanted to expand it into the whole community. So I was sort of adamantly wanted to be called Gay Face, but wanted to include a lot of trans people in it. And then I remember arguing with Courtney, and she said, can't you call it Queer Face? And I went, that's not a fucking thing, Queer Face. It's Gay Face, it's funny. And anyway, so the idea, I went, what do we need to do? Social media is the thing I have to get involved in with this.
Yeah.
What's the most social media friendly thing? A square. What can I do with a square? A box, a white box, because it bounces light everywhere. It's an empty space. People can create their own thing. So I suddenly went, okay, I'm going to do that. I'm going to build a white box. I just had this thing, and within 2 days, I had built a white box, and I'm going to get people in. I'm going to secretly get people in over 3 months, and then at the same day, at the same time, I want everyone to drop their picture on Instagram and on Twitter, all at exactly the same time. And I'd never seen that done before. And so I invited, it ended up being 120 people I shot. It was I nearly packed the whole thing in. I shot 120 people where they'd come, and I'd say, but paint the box, draw on the box, decorate it, put whatever you want in it, just express yourself. How would you like to see yourself in 10 years' time that it represents you? Or I'd have ideas and things. So I'd also come up with things and cast people. But it was, I went to San Francisco over a week, and I shot 65 people in this box, and my back went completely, so I couldn't walk. 2 days before I was getting on the plane, I literally couldn't move, and I had to have my neighbor put my shoes on, go to the doctor and go, I cannot cancel this. Give me the strongest drugs you've got. So I was in San Francisco, unable to get out of bed till I'd taken these pills. Then I'd finally be able to get out of bed. And then, of course, I was drinking at night. I mean, it was like a shit show. And then I was in New York shooting. So I had a box in New York, box in San Francisco, box here. I did London later on. And I did this, and everyone I didn't give anyone a picture because I knew it would leak. Someone would post it, they wouldn't pay attention. So no one was allowed to see or get their picture until 30 minutes before they had to drop them. And I was going to have a tie-in pop-up exhibition the same day. So I did all this, and then we sent all the pictures 30 minutes before, and everyone said the size is wrong, because of course, once he got an assistant, they never do anything right. So he'd sent all the wrong sizes. So we then had to resend all of the images to people, they might go, I don't like it, they might not want to do it. Every single person dropped that. They were having a competition to drop them as fast as possible, and it went exploded, and everyone was like, what the fuck? And no one had heard of it. And Gay Face trended on Twitter, and it went everywhere, and it was just huge. And then it went on for 3 years. I went to DragCon and shot. I went to Folsom and shot, built and put a box there. And then that then turned into my next book, but this time I got interviews with people, because it became, at the time, it was when the whole sexual and gender kind of revolution was really exploding. That was 2018. So I was doing this, I was doing it in 2018, book came out in 2020. I had people, again, I wanted to help people who didn't get it about non-binary and all of their stuff. So I had certain people, I interviewed them, so they'd talk about themselves. So it was just a really accessible way for people to go, someone who's non-binary is actually now trans. But so I'd have people just talking about themselves and somebody. So it was a really nice way and accessible way and fun way and creative and lots of nudity and craziness.
I mean, now today we always talk about an LGBTQ+.
Yeah.
And with that movement, does it really help and support what you're doing?
Or
you are doing the things to support it.
I'm doing that. I was doing something to support it and to also do. Yeah, I was doing my part in that to help it not be something that's annoying. To let people have to lots of people who are going, oh, what the fuck is that? You know, just give somebody access who's just going thinking this is actually what matters to that person. It doesn't cost me anything. But it really makes them comfortable. So let's make it accessible. And it was just interesting to me. It was just something that seemed relevant, and it resonated. People really got into it. But then, of course, the book came out. I did my last shoots in London for the book, and then COVID happened. It was like 2 days before I flew back, and COVID. But then it was lockdown. And I thought the publisher, because they had a clause, they could pull it because of natural disaster or things like that. And thankfully they didn't. But it was really frustrating. It was like I had a launch online with Alaska. We just sat on my balcony and did a thing with a book. Does it work? It was fine, but it was in the... Why drag? I had three. I launched in New York, a launch here, drag performances. That was half the fun, was doing it. And it was also very hard to promote... In terms of magazines, Why Drag went into every magazine everywhere, mainstream, everyone, because it was new. And but this was the thing with the boxes is it's about them being next to each other and how they relate to each other as much as what's in it. And the publisher would send out boxes for people to publish, and they just publish a box. And then it wasn't. It's about how everything works together. And so it wasn't exciting in the same. There was fun, but there were interesting and some famous people, but it didn't have that kind of dynamism. But so when it ended up being a thing in the gallery, because Why Drag was a bigger success for me personally, so I felt like, oh, the drag queen stuff, everyone loves that. But people go, no, they really loved the boxes.
Gay Face.
Yeah, it was it was Gay Face. The book, I wasn't allowed to call it Gay Face. It was actually a trans woman who talked me round, because she said, I'm a trans woman, but my whole life I've been fighting to be accepted by gay men, and they've not made me feel welcome, so I don't want to be under the moniker gay. It makes me feel uncomfortable. So I went, okay, now I don't want somebody like Courtney saying, why don't you call it Queer Faces? It was her saying, this was my personal experience. Gay men were the worst to me as a trans woman. So I called it Rainbow Revolution, which is a bit hokey,
but it's
fine.
It's so poetic, right?
It's not, but actually,
Rainbow Revolution is very naff.
Shut up.
You know what
they wanted to call it? They wanted to call it Express Yourself, the publisher. And I went, I'm not calling it. I said, I'm not fucking calling it Born This Way either. It's like, no. Rainbow Revolution's just fine.
No.
Gay Face is fucking cool. I wanted it to be called Gay Face. They wouldn't call it Gay Face. So, can we move on?
So during the COVID time, obviously you cannot take any picture of, you know, any photograph at all, right?
I did one thing I was really proud of that didn't go anywhere. I went to all of the most famous drag queens I knew because I could shoot outside. So I shot them all as boys outside. And then happened to have them all at some point in their careers in makeup. So I then turned, and it was a pro-mask, because there was all of this mask controversy. And I put, so their masks that I created on their faces were them in makeup. So it was their own mouths in makeup with their boy bodies and their thingies. That was really cool.
Wow, have you published those pictures?
It's just online.
Online?
No. It went onto like online things, and they put it on Queerty and things. But no, it's so frustrating. And I looked at it the other day and went, it's really cool. It's really
good.
Why
didn't you do a book on that?
Because that's just one thing, isn't it? I mean, I should put it into my next book. I'm trying to...
Is it on your Instagram group pages?
It's on my website, magnushastings.com. It's called Mask Up. It's called hashtag Mask Up. Hashtags are over, though, aren't they? We've got to stop that hashtag thing. No, but it wasn't then. Don't be rude. Hashtags were all the rage.
Okay, so what is your next project? What are you thinking next?
I came back from England like 6 weeks ago, so that was, and I've been waiting to hear.
And your sister is so proud of you.
She was. It was really,
she's
it was
so
really
proud.
Nice. She came up to see it, and she genuinely, it's like her jaw hit the floor, and she genuinely was really proud. And I really respect her opinion. I mean, she's in that world, and she just went.
Yeah, she's so proud.
She was, it's very important. I'm like, okay. It was really nice to actually be to for my work to be seen like that, and the gallery are very excited about it. It was, as I said, lots of people came through, people were loving it, so they want to tour it. So I've created the tour pack with them, and locked all that down. So now they've just got to pitch it to all over the place. So we'll see if it gets picked up. I mean, I'm always out seeing is believing. It'd be lovely.
Next project. Next big project.
I've been working on a new book and then a tie-in documentary, which I won't say too much about, but it's a bit tricky because I'm always butting heads with the producer I'm working
with. Of course. I can see that.
It's not, but it's okay. I mean,
you need a producer who supports your vision, and it's very difficult
tricky.
because you need to communicate.
Well, hopefully she won't watch this, but the big argument we're having is she keeps, so my new project is about old queer people, so it's 75 to mm-hmm. death, but it's turned into a really big issue. So that's where I am. That's my next project, dealing with that. No, but the idea was to do a book. Getting the stories of going in and photographing people, but getting their stories of these people who are basically dying out, people living through the AIDS crisis and Stonewall and all of that. So that's what I'm working on. And they're incredible stories, but it's hard photographing the older people, because I've always had these very kind of photogenic subjects, and I love doing what I'm doing, but it's tricky because, first of all, people can't contort themselves and throw themselves around, and you know that lots of people, when they see themselves, they just see themselves aging, so they find it very difficult. So it's an interesting, different thing, but I think it's valuable.
It just seems that, you know, you do your drag, you do your rainbow what?
Fuck off. Let's call it Gay Face.
I mean, you are actually addressing the issue, what the world, especially in America, is talking about, the gender issue.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I think you picked it up without even knowing that this is actually a social and political issue. Mm. You've been doing it. So tell me that if a younger person coming to you and she said to you, oh, Magnus, he or she or they, ask you, I have a dream. I wanted to do photographer. I want to be a photographer, but I don't know which direction I should be doing.
find what, always, it's what you love. It's find the thing that excites you. And it's funny, when people would, the thing that I found what I loved, and I'd shoot everything, and I learned how to make things look expensive with nothing. It's never been about having an expensive camera. It's about light. It's about seeing light. I remember once meeting, it was David LaChapelle's assistant, and he wanted to do his own thing, and he went, but I never do it unless I was working with so-and-so and so-and-so. And I went, why? Why don't you get some new people, try them out? Don't have to, just play, work things out. And the thing that when you got no money, you just throw a light, I use outside, and then you put a light in it, and you play with the light, and it suddenly looks like an expensive set. It's like, just try everything, play with everything, and find what you love is what you should do.
Thank you, Magnus. It's great being here with you after all these years.
I know. Was it 2.5?
2.5 years, yeah.
Thank you for having me. You.